WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In 1981, the year that the Pulitzer Prize was taken away from Janet Cook for fabricating a story, it was awarded instead to Teresa Carpenter for her Village Voice reporting on three murder stories. One of those stories, about actress and Playboy centerfold Dorothy Stratton, was adapted into the film Star 80. Carpenter's new book, Missing Beauty, is the result of her investigation into the 1983 murder of a Boston prostitute named Robin Benedict. Her killer, William Douglas, was a Tufts University research scientist. Journalist Teresa Carpenter is drawn to stories involving the murder of a spouse, lover, or mentor, situations where love turns to obsession and results in murder, the ultimate form of control.
When I was assigned my first crime piece by an editor at the Village Voice, I found it was invigorating working with an event that was absolutely undeniable. I mean, when a murder occurs, when any act of violence occurs, it's something happened. You know it happened, and the energy that gives you is considerably more invigorating than say, reporting on the state of the economy. At least I found that to be the case.
What got you onto the Robin Benedict story?
One afternoon in the fall of 1983, I was skimming the New York Times and ran across an account of the Douglas case. It was shortly after Dr. Douglas had been indicted, and I was absolutely fascinated by it. I mean, you had a very distinguished professor of cell biology who was living an apparently conventional life in many respects, yet found himself in the combat zone, which is Boston's red light district. Obsessed with a prostitute who came out to his home one evening in the suburbs, the home he shared with his wife and three children, and disappeared. I mean, clearly something very interesting happened there, and it had me hooked from the first moment I read it, and I was hooked for the full 4 years I was researching the story.
So what were the questions you really wanted to answer?
Well, I wanted to know how she got out there to the suburbs that night. Their lives, all four of their lives intersected at that point. What was the wife doing? How did she allow that to happen? What was Douglas thinking to allow a prostitute into his home? Who was this prostitute? Was she an unusual woman that she would be allowed into his home? Was she a friend? Was she a friend of the family? I mean, people are often not what they seem, and I was curious as to what kind of persona these people had developed in dealing with one another.
Now, what you found out about the killer, William Douglas, was that although his colleagues described him as a meticulous scientist and a crashing bore, that he was living this this double life, that he had a long-term relationship with Robin Benedict, who was a prostitute. He paid for the relationship, and he'd even embezzled over $167,000 in research funds to support her and to keep them both in cocaine.
Yes, it's interesting that at the point Douglas met Benedict, he was at a very precarious juncture in his life. He had just turned 40. He was bumping up against the limits of his ability as a scientist. He was very distinguished in one area, which was cell culture, but he was never going to be a Schweitzer. I mean, he had to acknowledge that fact. And he was looking, as he later wrote in some of his love letters, for a new hope for living, someone or something who would transform him from the rather drab creature that he was into an exciting, svelte man of the world. And Robin Benedict, for her part, was very skillful at creating that kind of illusion.
What's kind of her job, too? It's what she gets paid to do, in a way.
Yes, yes, it is. Although it was interesting to me in talking to other girls in the combat zone, other working girls, prostitutes, that there is a certain rudimentary code of conduct that you use in dealing with a John, and that's that if he appears to be coming attached to you, you have to reinforce that this isn't love you're feeling. This is physical attraction, and I'm sending you home to your wife in the suburbs. There are girls who you will lead a guy on, but in talking to the women, the combat zone, it's generally not a good policy, because then you raise expectations you can't fulfill, and they do become nuisances. Benedict, either because she was inexperienced, she had only been in prostitution a few months at the time she met Douglas, or because she was greedy, did encourage his emotional attachment to her, and indeed left him with the impression that she was fond of him. And that, I believe, is why the relationship got out of control.
William Douglas was not a professional killer. But he not only killed Robin Benedict, he disposed of the body in such a way that it's still never been found.
That's correct. I think that is one reason why this case continues to exert the influence on public imagination that it does. Robin's body was never been found.
But don't you find it interesting that an amateur killer would be able to dispose of the body so effectively that it still eluded, you know, professional crime investigators?
You're right in that it is very difficult to dispose of a body. I mean, if you throw them in the river, they tend to float. You know, it's hard to get rid of a body. But a non-criminal, such as Douglas, flailing around in a moment of passion, might just hit upon the scheme accidentally that would perfectly dispose of a body, and apparently he did. You know, at one point, there was a theory much in vogue that Douglas had taken the body to his laboratory at Tufts and disposed of it chemically, or perhaps preserved it chemically and then hid it someplace where he could go to visit it. The theory being that he may have been as obsessed with her in death as he was in life. I think we may never know.
You spent, I think it was 3 years in Boston doing research on the story, and you had to spend probably a lot of time in the combat zone, Boston's porn and prostitution district. Did you have to learn how to win the trust of prostitutes who you needed to speak to?
Yes, that was a very difficult aspect of the reporting. I am not a street person myself and never have pretended to be, and so it took a period of time of cultivating sources, people I had been introduced to through other journalists. I know one friend had a girlfriend who danced as a stripper in the combat zone. She introduced me to a bouncer who in turn introduced me to a bartender. And coming in that way with letters of introduction, so to speak, I managed to integrate myself a little more gracefully than I would have had I just gone down and started sitting in bars.
Of all the murders that you've written about, which one still troubles you the most, or which one had, like, the most personal impact on you?
Well, I think because I lived 4 years with the Douglas case, this has probably affected me the most deeply. I mean, you can't be immersed in a situation like this for that long without it affecting your sleep, and I did have a series of strange nightmares emanating from the research on this story. But, you know, a couple of the other pieces, the Stratton piece, Burwood's story, the story of the mental patient who killed his wife, that always haunted me.
Have there been any murders among people who you know? I mean, have you ever had a friend or family member who's been murdered? I'm just interested, you know, in the sense that you've been so professionally interested in the subject.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a close friend of our family, a close friend of my mother's and her mother who were killed by the husband in the family, and I think it was much the same situation. I was not a child when that occurred, but it did affect me very profoundly.
Do you think that has to do with your interest as a reporter in crime stories?
I think possibly. I mean, when something so awful occurs in the midst of everyday life, you know, it's like colors look brighter, people are sadder, people are angrier, everything becomes more vivid. And to a reporter, I mean, that you know, it has a certain magnetism that cannot be denied.
You said before that when you were working on Missing Beauty, you had a lot of related nightmares. Would you be willing to share one?
I don't know that the particulars are so fascinating, but the theme that recurred was being alone at night in a place that resembled the combat zone, a labyrinthine center city area, looking through the streets for something. You're being pursued on one hand and looking for something on the other. And I spent so much of my time looking for missing documents, looking for missing links in chronology, looking for aspects of character, that I think it was a sort of a nocturnal metaphor for the investigation.
Are the dreams over now?
Yes, the dreams are over. I think the demon has been exorcised.
Okay, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Teresa Carpenter's new book is titled Missing Beauty. This is Fresh Air.